Hey guys, it's a new podcast. I'm up in Big Bear with our friends. We are camping, we're packing up, we are leaving right now. The kids had a blast. No one got hurt except for Eric. We posted that video. Go to my YouTube. Type in stupid dad. Idiot, stupid dad and his idiot kid. It's a funny video. All right. Wise guys in Utah, the 25th, 26th. I think those are the proper dates. And then of this month. And then I will be doing, what's the other date? Oh, I'm in Portland. We just added it on the 29th, 30th. It's the Tuesday, Wednesday, because that Friday, April 1st, I shoot my hour special. So if you haven't got tickets, go to theimprov.com or go to BurtBurtBurt.com. Check out my YouTube page. I'm still editing the Stanhope one. It's 44 minutes. The Stanhope vlog is 44 minutes, and it's so fucking good. I don't want to take anything out. That's it. Enjoy the podcast. Today's guest, we met a really long time ago in Houston. And I've known him ever since. He is a fantastic comedian, extremely talented, and really interesting guy. And to be honest with you, I forgot I had this podcast. I didn't know what I was going to post. And someone said, whatever happened to the Jerry Rocha one? And I said, shit, I never posted it. So I'm posting it now. Happy Wednesday. It's the Birdcast. Today's guest, Jerry Rocha.
This is...
Can you just play music and stuff?
You can do it, I think, if you work for... You're talking to that mic?
Hello.
My levels are super hot because I've been doing recording VO.
Ah, nice.
Here, scoot that back. I feel like you're right up on it. I feel like you're not comfortable.
I'm fine, man. Thank you. Thanks for having me,
dude. No, dude, this is a blast.
I'm excited.
But yeah, I was... So I got drunk in the man cave. By the way, fucking, you ever wake up and you're like, thank God I didn't Periscope that. I got drunk in the man cave and was like... I'll just play music, yeah. and I was dancing, and it was, I turned the lights off, and like some songs utilized the different speakers, you know?
Okay, yeah.
I don't know how I should have a guy come in and check my sound, but like all the speakers, some songs, like they play different fucking songs, or different parts of the song, so I was walking around the room, I was so fucking out of it.
Oh,
I stayed up until like 2 in the morning.
That's
I had a cigar.
Killer, man. That was last night?
Oh, that was last night.
Man, I was mourning Bowie. I couldn't believe it.
Oh, fuck.
Dude. What a fucking, like...
I didn't even know he had cancer.
I think they hid it from everybody. They're just like, let him record this last record, and then that's it.
God, you know? What kind of cancer was it?
I didn't hear. I don't know, but 18 months, they said he was fighting it or whatever.
18 months?
18 months. So they, I mean... It
that's
must
long.
Have been, yeah, man.
That's long with a lot of, like... fuck
it's
that.
It's crazy.
You know, it's so funny. I'm definitely not... I've never dealt with anything serious.
Right.
Ever. But like I heard people that go through cancer go, yeah, if I have to go through chemo again, I'm just gonna die. I'm just
right.
gonna kill me.
Yeah.
Chemo must be that bad. But then the other day I got like I had too much garlic.
Okay.
And I felt sick the next day and I was like, God, I know what they mean. Like, what a fucking I have the ability to fucking
that's great.
Empathize with someone going through chemo.
For me, it's if I have to replay a level on a video game. Oh. I'm like, motherfucker, it took me an hour to get past
it. Are you a video game guy?
Huge.
Really? Yeah, I know you're like not a comic book guy, but
that
you're kind
too.
Of a nerd.
Everything. Like, everything.
I remember that the first time we hung out, you like, I forget what you said, but you were like, yeah, I don't party like that. I'm pretty much a nerd.
Yeah.
I was like, really?
Okay, when I would go on the road, I would bring a video game system with me. Like, no question. Most times, I'll just sit in my room and play. I always go to a comic book store.
Oh, really?
I always will go to a comic book store like that I've never been to just to see and maybe buy a thing or two. You know, this is so stupid, but my dream was always to find some, like, mega hot chick who worked at a comedy store and just go fuck her after the show. Like, that
you
was
go
like,
there, and then you show up. And
right.
Gives you attitude, but you win her over
yes.
with some reference about...
Absolutely, yes.
And then she's like, oh, and then you guys start dating. Wait, what
that
was,
or a music store? I would go to the both. That was always a help.
Fucking almost
finding
gone.
A hot chick at a music store or a hot chick at a comic book store is like dream come true. That
what,
was like
what was I used to love going to. I was thinking about taking the girls to Amoeba because they don't.
Yes.
They don't. You know, my kids don't know that that exists.
You can just download it for them. They just click and they have it.
Dude, they don't even know there's a difference between cable and the internet.
Right.
Like
right.
They get on Netflix and they're like, just get it on, Dad. Just watch it. Like we watched a show the other day. She goes, I want to watch all of them. And I was like, that's not the way life works. Like, yeah, it is. Go to Netflix. We watched all of Bill Burr's F is for Family.
Right.
Except for one episode. Thank God the girls didn't see the part where the balls show up. But it's a fucking great series.
Yeah, man.
It's so good. But yeah. What got you into comic books?
Always. Well, it was my fifth birthday. I was in kindergarten, and this kid, it was a kindergarten or first grade. And when this kid, all your classmates, you know, you have like a little, your friends from school, a little tiny birthday party. And this kid just got me, like, he just had me like a bundle of X-Men comics.
Really?
Like, yeah. And I was like, oh, cool. And I didn't know what this shit was. I was like, oh, okay, sure. Yeah. And I just read one and I was like, oh, that's it. I'm hooked.
Are you serious?
Yeah. I was like, oh, this is the greatest shit ever. Like, I loved it. And then so, yeah, I would always go to this place in Dallas where I'm from. It's a place called Dave's Comics. I don't think it's even there anymore. But we would just go. You know, my mom was nice enough. She would take me like every Saturday, you know, and I would go and get a couple of comics. And yeah.
No, I got Georgia is my oldest. I got her into comic books. I did a show
with
Meltdown.
Yeah.
And I was like, I mean, I never read a comic book in my life, but I think it's because I'm dyslexic.
Yeah.
So I used to have a very hard time with the bubbles and the squares.
Yeah.
I'd be like, where
are you supposed to go? Yeah.
I'd be all over the map. So I was like, I've got enough friends that love them.
Yeah.
Like they've got to be good. It's got to be good for her to read. And so I said to the guy, I want to say it was there or it was at this other place. Might have been this other place, Comic Smash on Ventura.
Sure, yeah, of course.
And I said to the guy, hey, what's like a cool thing for, like, what's a cool, like, I think I was like, what's a cool book for like girls? Like, and then he said, the Runaways.
That's a good one, yeah.
Runaways. And I said, yeah. Okay. And he goes, well, are you going to read it? And I, so funny, I went, dude, seriously? Because I just was like, it's a book for kids. But then he went, yeah, dead seriously. And I went, no. And he goes, because I've read them all and they're pretty good. And I was like, oh, okay. And then he gave me the first volume.
Oh, shit.
And Georgia now has read all of them.
And she likes it.
She's obsessed.
That's great. That's great.
And yeah, and it's great. And my youngest daughter has a hard time. She's dyslexic.
Yeah.
So she has a hard time with comic books. But she wishes she had an equivalent. Like
sure.
A literally, like
sure.
She sits next to Georgia. Georgia reads it, and Georgia will tell her stuff that's going
oh,
on.
Oh, that's great, though. That's
yeah.
Good. Yeah, that's good.
But well, that's so crazy because, you know, it's you get like a stereotype of, I think because you're Mexican, that you shouldn't be liking comic books. You should be
none
drinking
of that.
Beer
right.
And fucking banging chicks on the road. Because I remember saying that to you, and you're like, yeah, I know I look Jewish, but I'm really Mexican.
yeah.
And I was like, you don't party at all? You're like, nah, I'm kind of a different kind of guy.
It sucks. When it sucks, I'm happy with it, but like, yeah. I was just the lamest, like, you know, like.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
No. Like,
only
not
kid?
That I know of, which is weird, because my mom didn't, like, when she got pregnant, she's like, I don't love this guy. So she just bolted and raised me on her own. Yeah. So, I mean, I think he's had other kids and shit. I've never met him or any of that stuff, but like, yeah. Like,
do you know who he is?
No, not really. Like I mean, I know his name, but like I don't even know if it's pronounced right. You know what I mean? It's like,
really,
yeah. He's a half Mexican, half Scottish guy. How crazy is that, right?
Shut up.
And yeah, my mom, they're just like fuck buddies. She's like, yeah. She even told me. I asked her. I was like, hey, so like, I finally, it was one of those things. Like, I didn't know how to approach this. Like, how do I tell? Yeah. Like, how do I ask my mom? Like, hey, were you just like a whore? Like, I didn't care. You know,
yeah.
Were you just hunting dick? Like, it's fine. You know? And she's like, no. She goes, I just, you know, and she said I was 23. You know, when we hooked up, and she's like, I was in love with Mick Jagger, and that dude wasn't Mick Jagger, and I was like, okay, fair enough. Like, all right, sure.
So wait, so did then your mom just took off and says like, fuck it, I'm raising it by myself.
Yeah.
And then you were raised by a single mother?
Yeah, and her sister, you know, my older aunt, and then when I was about two, she met a dude who she never wanted to get married. She's very, like,
really?
Fiercely independent. And, yeah, she met a dude who was, like, her boyfriend, and he ended up being my dad the rest of his life. Like, I consider him my father. So that's why I've never had, like, that need to go meet my biological dad, because
yeah.
I already kind of had that, you know. But yeah. I mean, it'd be cool if he had siblings. I'd love to meet them. That'd be kind of cool. But yeah,
that would be cool to meet.
But I don't want to wreck. What if they think their dad was like? What if he was cheating when he? You know what I mean? Like, I don't want that.
Yeah,
that would suck if they're like, oh, my mom and dad have been happy for 68 years. And I'm like, hey, by the way, you know,
yeah.
Sorry, but yeah, I hate to ruin that. But.
I had a friend. I'm not gonna say his name because everyone would know exactly who he is. But he was born out of wedlock.
Oh wow!
And his found out who his dad was, and turned out his dad lived down the street. and the kids he played with, those were his half brothers.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Did he
yeah.
ever tell him? Did it ever
I'll tell you? Hello. It's Patrice.
No way.
Yeah, don't say I'm back on recording. Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Wow.
Yeah.
And was that ever outed? Like, was that ever revealed to the... Wow.
Right.
Could you imagine, dude? Man, like, I would be... See, because I love family, you know, because I have a lot of cousins that's, you know, Mexican, you know what I mean? Like, so I always looked at my little cousins like my brothers and sisters, you know? I love the idea of meeting, you know,
now,
I
would have been all over. Is everyone as Mexican as you?
Way more Mexican. Way more. Yeah,
Is the Scottish side in you?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Like, they were like... It was because they're all raised in South Texas, Laredo. And my mom, the minute she got pregnant, she moved to Dallas. And so I was born in Dallas. My whole family is from a border town right there in Texas.
Really?
You know, and I'm from Dallas. So I was just, you know, I grew up around everybody. Like, the neighborhood we lived in was very, like, lower middle class. So there was, like, it was like the Goonies, dude. There's, like, one of every race in every apartment, you know? So yeah. I grew up with everybody, you know? So I just kind of, you know, like...
So did you grow up in an apartment or a house?
Apartment. Oh, yeah.
Really? So what's it... I mean, this is going to sound like one percenter question right now.
That's fine.
Like, I grew up in a house. And so when I first moved to an apartment, I was like, oh, how cool is this?
Right.
But like when you grow up in an apartment, was there a point that you moved to a house or where you were like, what the fuck?
No, never.
Really?
Like, I've always lived in apartments. Like, my apartment now, you know, because I'm just fucking struggling road comic, you know what I mean? Yeah. So I live in this little one, like, Bobby Kelly came to visit a couple of years ago, and he just called it Cell Block D. That's what he called my apartment. He goes, dude, you live in a fucking cell, dude. Look at this, you know? And it really is just this tiny little room. But, like, I've always just lived in apartments. Like, you know, like, it's just... Always. So, I mean, when I go to houses, I'm like, yeah, it's nice. But to me, it's just like, I don't know how to explain it. It's like an atheist going to church. Like, oh, yeah, this is cool how you guys do this. But, you know, I'm happy over here. Yeah, I'm used to this. It's
well,
weird.
I mean, if I lived on the road, you got a girlfriend, right?
Yeah.
But if I lived on the road, just girlfriend, no kids, dude, I'd be in the tiniest fucking studio. Because I got to be dead honest with you. I don't know if I'd have a anywhere. Yeah. Like I said something to Doug. I've always been obsessed with Doug Benson. And how he makes a ton of money.
Yeah.
And still just lives in this same apartment.
Right.
And doesn't do anything really. Like, I've been obsessed. I've asked him, like, probably 7 times. Like, hey, just a heads up. Like, do you not want to own a house? Like, no, I don't fucking. He was like, it's a bachelor mentality of, like little is less. Like, I look at Ari. Ari's the same way.
Yeah, man.
Ari's like, I got a fucking place in New York, got a place in L.A., that's it.
Low overhead, you know, it's great. Like, I mean, you know, of course, like, you know, if my girl, like, you know, if something hit, yeah, you would think about it because it would be nice just to, you know.
You'd think about it, but let me tell you something. I almost guarantee you, and I only say a comics mentality, few comics that I believe really have the comic spirit are like, make their first check and they're like, now I'm buying a house.
Right.
Like, most comics are like, fuck it. To this day, I mean, if I told you our house payment on this, because I was like, I don't want to buy a house until I don't have to worry about losing it.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Like our fucking monthly nut on this is nothing. I could make it featuring.
That's badass.
And so I'm like,
oh, that's great.
And only because I was like, I want to have so much down.
Yeah.
That I don't have to worry about.
Absolutely. That's how you should do it, dude. Cause like, I'm also not into this like flipping and all this bullshit. Like if I bought a house, it'd be like, I hope to live here the rest of my life type of thing, you know? Yeah. So it'd be one of those like, you know, that's another thing. Like I always think about it. That's funny. Like once I get that first big paycheck, what am I going to spend it on? I'm like, I probably just get a one bedroom. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I would just move to a bigger apartment.
There's something to be said for like, okay, I've made money. Now it's time for me to, instead of renting, invest my money and let my money make money. But I'm not that, I don't know. I'm not that guy that has that brain. And I shouldn't say no comic has that brain.
I know what you mean.
I think most comics are more like, dude, I just want to sit, wake up, and think about jokes.
Yeah.
And then I want to find a place to get on stage at night and tell those jokes and come back. And for me, get fucked up, listen to music,
yeah,
and wake up and think about jokes again.
You don't have to wait on a plumber. You don't have to wait. There's all these things that, you know, maybe it's a convenience of just like, yeah, I know I pay rent every month, but still, you know, mortgage is a monthly payment too, right? And then
It's never what, dude, you pay rent, they go, it's $1,200,
whatever rent
is these days. I'm just guessing, but like $1,200 for a 3-bedroom, 2-bedroom in Hollywood. And you're like, great, there it is. That's my rent. And you don't have to worry about anything else.
That's it.
You get a house, they're like, your mortgage is going to be $2,000. You're like, oh, I can afford that. Your taxes are going to be, and you're like, what the fuck? Like, how come this shit crept up? You know who's really good with money is Al Madrigal, another Mexican guy who no one ever thinks is Mexican.
Right. Yeah,
you and him get typecast a lot of like spicy Saturdays, and you're like, fuck.
I hate doing those shows, man, because it's like, I'm not like, I'm not one of those type of comedians. I mean, I'll do any show, right? But like, thankfully, I'll put it to you this way. Those shows in Los Angeles are great because LA, everybody is kind of used to, oh yeah, that's cool that you're Mexican, but don't look it, right? But if I do those kind of shows in like Texas, or it just sucks because everyone just is expecting, you know, me to come up playing an accordion, you know what I mean? Just like, yeah, like I'm like, no, that's not how I am, you know? I love doing those shows here or in New York are like the only two places where ethnic shows are actually okay to do. You know,
it's a statement as to how evolved culture is out here. I don't think of anyone as Mexican,
right?
Like, I don't see someone and go, that's my Mexican friend,
right?
Like,
right,
I definitely,
but anywhere else you have to segregate. It's so weird. It's like, you just you grew up in the South, right?
I grew up in Florida, so like,
yeah,
for me it was a natural progression because I didn't see anyone as Cuban. Like, I understood Cuban,
right?
But I didn't say like, that's my Cuban friend.
Right.
I just was like, no, that's Ty Rodriguez,
right?
Or that's Tony Hernandez, or like, and right now there's a 20 Cuban guys going, how come you didn't say my name? But like, I never saw the difference. And I think that's here the same, but man, they see the difference in Atlanta.
Oh God.
Like in
oh my God.
In Michigan. Like, there's places that sees that they're like,
those are the only, like, every time I'm on the road, it's the only time people will grill me after a show. Just disbelieving that I'm Mexican. It's like, you can't be. Come on. Oh, come on. Like, I was in a bad thing, first of all. Like, what do you give a shit? You know, like, yeah, sorry, you know, like, I don't know what to tell you. But yeah, like, the only place, LA, New York, never got that. Out here, like, out in the wild, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, anywhere, it's always like, oh, come on. You can't be. And I'm like, gee, like, what is it?
Did you slip into that, like, that, I mean, everyone has that easy go-to of like, all right, I'm starting stand-up. You probably started in Dallas.
Yeah.
And you're like, all right, let's bang out some Mexican jokes. And it's an easy way to kill in a room. Like, I remember watching one guy work, and he was like, he wasn't even that Mexican, but man, he would, if there was a Latino crowd, it was like, hello, my,
what's
hello,
up, homes? Que pasó, wey?
Yeah, chicletas.
Yeah.
It's Steve Trevino. I should just say his name. But like, it's Steve Trevino. That's how you say his name. But when they brought him up on stage then, it was like,
Trevino.
Trevino.
Oye, Trevino.
Jerry Rocha.
Rocha. Yeah, you know, I had a couple of jokes about, but I never went that route. It was like, I was just like, nah, my first set was so terrible. You know, of course.
Really?
Oh God, it was so impersonating pro wrestlers and all this bullshit. Like, it was the worst. But I was 18. I would do Hogan and Macho Man. It was so dumb. And come on, I'm just 18 years old thinking like I'm fucking, you know, like Eddie Murphy, you know, like, just up there like, well, let me tell you something, Mean Gene. It's just so stupid. It's so bad.
Well, it's better than impersonating Texas wrestlers. Like, this is Kerry Von Erickson.
Yeah, this is Von Erickson. And just do all these awful suicides. Just like, just bring it dark. And like, hey, I'm going to be the Von Erickson. Just lay out a bunch of bodies. Like, yeah, like, I mean, it was weird. But like, I kind of didn't want to do that. I don't know why, but something told me like, don't just you know, do what you think is funny, and if I have a joke about being Mexican that I appreciate, I'll do it, you know. But like, I never tried to pander too hard. Like, I mean, you know, like,
I'm a pandering motherfucker.
Yeah, are you? Yeah,
I was a pandering motherfucker.
I mean, it was just I don't know, man. I started off, I would MC all the time, of course. I was like the house MC.
It's such a great...
It's the best.
Because you really learn. I almost said to Joey the other day, I was like, let's do a show where I host and you close.
Yeah,
because like, I don't mind hosting. There's no ego slap
to
me.
No.
And you get to get up
all the time.
There's for a young comic. And correct me if I'm wrong. There is a big learning curve that happens when you walk up onto the stage 9 times a night.
It's amazing. And then you, because I started this club. It sounds like a gay bar, but it was a club in Dallas called The Back Door. And the reason they called it that, it was because it was in the back of like restaurants.
Yeah.
Like they would have like, you know, they'd find a place, had like a little back room.
Oh, it was like a moving comedy club?
Yeah. They would always like, oh, we were moving, we're going here. But they tried to stay in the same, you know. Now I think they've been in the same place for like, you know, 5 or 6, you know, 8 years or something.
So
you
show like that in Toronto called Clandestine.
Yeah.
And it's like it's all in the same place, but they don't want to tell you where it is because it's a smoking club.
Right. Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. And it would be like one of those, you know, 12 comics a night. And when I was a beginner, you know, like, well, hey, you'll host. And I was like, all right. Yeah. And at first I was deathly afraid. That was, to me, there's nothing more intimidating than emceeing. Like, I would much rather get up there and blab for an hour, you know, than have to go up and get them right at the beginning and then hold on to it. And then, like, if somebody bombs, it's up to you to go back and be like, hey, what's up? And then, like, you know, it's all the dealing with egos of, like, let's say somebody crushes and then the guy next to them, the guy behind them doesn't want to follow that, right? So they make you go up and eat a bullet.
You do a little time?
Yeah, can you do a little bit of time? And at that point, shit, I already burned the 4 minutes I'd written down ever. So I'm like,
let me see your set list. I'll do a little time.
Yeah, exactly. So I would just go up there and be like, all right. I mean, the only thing I didn't like about emceeing was those fucking shitbag comics who would, like, this one guy I'll never forget, he would always go up and go, hey, my first time, it was like, what do you want me to say for you, man? Because I love the idea of, like, I want to get these intros right, you know, memorize. And he would go, tell them to get ready for the smooth, laid back comedy, you know, and I'd be like, okay. So I go up there and I say that, and then he comes up to like start me up, and he does like this just crazy ass Mick Jagger impersonation, and then he goes, smooth and laid back my ass. And it's like, you'd fucking twat.
Fucking.
Like, it's just, and it was like, and first of all, it never killed. No one in the audience was like, oh, he showed that MC. Like, none of them gave a shit. That he, you know, it was so stupid.
Was it a black comic that would
do
that?
No, it was a white guy.
There's a bunch of notorious stories of white comics having to bring on black acts and the black guy being like, tell them you ain't seen the hood until you see this guy. And they're like, you ain't seen the hood until you see this guy. And the guy gets up and like, you ain't seen the hood? Fuck you, motherfucker.
Oh, yeah.
What the fuck? And you're like, God. You couldn't have just told a joke?
You couldn't have just told a joke. You had to burn me. You had to make me look like
now
a dipshit.
Everyone hates my
now
guts.
Now I'm racist all of a sudden,
fuck
you know?
Like, you.
Yeah, it is so, and then like, oh God, I hated it so bad that eventually I would purposely blow it. You know, when they had intros like that I knew, okay, I'm the butt of the joke, I would just blow it. I'm like, fuck them. So, and then I'd be like, oh man, I forgot. Sorry.
I would have the hardest time remembering names. Like, I would go up, I go, what's your name? I'm just thinking of like, I'm trying to think of a Tig Notaro.
Sure.
I'm not saying that I ever brought her up. I'm just trying to think.
Yeah, of course.
Actually, the name I'm thinking of is her old roommate, Kjell. I forget his last name, but it was Kjell.
Oh, wow.
And I remember bringing him up one time. And I was like, how do I say your name again? And he's like, it's super easy, Kjell Jorgensen, I think.
Right.
And I was like, okay. And so I got on stage, and literally the second I got on stage, I was like, what was his name again? And I was like, fuck. And now I'm doing time to try to remember his. I'm looking at him.
Right.
I'm like, so I was driving down the road, and I'm looking at him going, what was
his
fucking
name?
I was like, you're going to love this next guy. And I was like, Steve Patterson. And he was like, and I was like, please don't have a joke about your name, but his name is Kjell. So he, of course, has jokes with the name. And I was like, fuck.
Oh, that's funny. Steve Patterson.
Like, I just could. I was so bad at. But all that is so good in the business of television, of like learning how to host.
No question, man. Like, you have to just, and that's why I love, like, if I do Comedy Magic Club at Hermosa, you know, Rich will have me host a lot, and it's fine. I love it because it just, man, you just kind of, there's no better feeling than crushing cold. You know what I mean? Like, when you learn to get that good to crush, it's just, forget it. Like, it's just amazing. Like,
getting up on stage and just, and with no, like, hey guys, this is about to start. I remember being like, that's the scariest thing about stand up. The scariest thing about stand up is how do I can keep them laughing. How do I start them?
Dude, I think what got me was when I first, it's like, you know, 21, 22. I've been doing it a couple of years. But when I first started, I was right out of high school. And all I knew was this little pocket in Dallas. And I thought, okay, this is it. Like, I thought, to me, making it was getting a weekend spot at that club, right? Because they did, I think, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, something like that at the time. And Wednesday and Thursday was more for like the beginners, you know what I mean? And then Friday, Saturday was when they had like their established, like, you know, the road dogs who lived in Dallas, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like guys who'd been on the road for, you know, since the early 80s. If Dallas was their home base, they would all go up then. And I thought that was making it. Like getting up then, I thought, well, fuck, I did it.
Yeah.
You know, and then it wasn't until I was like 22 when I was like, no, there's the road. And I'm like, what's the road? You know, like, what? You can go other places and do this?
Did you get on the road at 22?
Yeah.
That, what the fuck?
So all my friends were in college and shit, and I was out.
So you just you skipped college altogether?
Right out of high school.
I did not see that as your path. Like I totally saw you as like graduated college, decided not to become a banker.
Right. No, I never. I shelved my comic book writing dreams. You know, I just started right out of high school because I mean that's all I did in high school. My friend Ben and I would just crack people up all the time, and then so you know I thought, you know what, I was on a date with my high school girlfriend. We would go to that comedy club all the time, and one night my girlfriend in high school were going on a date. Let's go to the back door, okay? And then I just happened to see a little sign on the table to think you're funny, try our open mic. And I was like, yeah, because I was thinking, well, I don't want to go to college. I didn't know what I wanted to do, right? But I was like, fuck, college, what, you know? And I thought, that's it. I was like, that's it.
Shut the fuck up.
That's it, because that's what I've always done, is just, you know, try to crack people up. And I so I was like, fuck yeah. And then so I asked him, I was like, I went up like, hey, how do you do this? And I'm like, well, you have to write 3 minutes of original humor. And I was like, okay, 3 minutes. And I was thinking, that's got enough. That, to me, that was the hardest thing. It took me like a month to finally, you know, and so I signed up and I went up and like I brought all my friends because I knew they were going to pity laugh. Right. Yeah. And so I had a great first set because they all pity laughed. And I was like, okay, good. And then after that, I begged them not to come again. I'm like, let me just bomb. Let me really, I just,
so
I
you understood that you'd been, that bombing was,
I needed, was, I was like, let me get this out of the way. Right. Let me get this one good set out of the way so I feel good about it.
Man.
You know, and then after that, I'm like, okay, nobody come for like a year, you know? And like, I just, and
you're
knew,
fucking 18 years old.
I knew all 18. I just, I was a huge comedy freak. I loved stand up comedy my whole life, you know?
Really?
So, yeah. So I just loved it. And then, so yeah, I mean, it was just, this is what I want to do. And I was like, fucking, I'm doing it. And like, and my mom was like, you know, we're always been poor. And she's like, look, I know it's going to be a struggle, but I support you. And I'm like, all right, thank you. Like, go ahead. You know, I'm not going to break your balls about it. I want you to be happy. Do what you want to do. You know, and just know that, you know, you're probably going to be dirt poor for a long time. I'm like, hey, I got it.
You know? How old are you now?
38. 38? We're about to be 38, yeah.
And so you go on the road 4 years in.
Yeah.
Like, how did you dodge the bullet of drugs and alcoholism?
I don't know. I think it was because the guys that I worked with were huge alcoholics.
Really?
The headliners who would take me on the road with them at the time, you know, great guy. He was one of the funniest people I've ever met. He taught me so much early about stand-up, but so self-destructive. And he was like a road dude who just, for whatever, I think it was because of alcohol, never really got his due. He lived out here for a minute and he always had heat, you know.
Do
it was
know
a
him?
Long time ago. What's that?
Do I know him?
I doubt it. Yeah, it was a long time ago. It was like, and is he, you know, a lot of, he's, I don't know, when did you start? When did you?
I started on my 26th birthday.
Nice.
I mean, let me rephrase that. I started when I was 25. I did stand up for the first time in Tallahassee.
Nice.
Right after the Rolling Stone article came out.
Yeah.
I moved to New York and then fucked around for like 7 months. Didn't do shit. And then on my 26th birthday, I consider that the day I started comedy.
That's
because
awesome.
I mean, I'd done like an open mic and I'd hang out at open mic clubs, but I wasn't taking it serious where I was like, all right, this is what I'm fucking doing.
Right.
I mean, I would tell people this is what I was doing, but 1999-ish.
Okay. He had already been, at that point, he had already peaked. You know what I mean? Like, you know, he had done Montreal. He did New Faces. He was like the one guy who didn't get anything out of his class. I think he was there with like Geraldo and Chappelle. It was like,
oh, so he's older.
And he, and it just, for whatever reason, you know, like, and you know, I don't know what it was, but he was, you know, he was the funniest guy you'd ever see.
Really?
I mean, like super funny, but just very self-destructive.
Is he still doing the road?
I don't know.
You don't even know if he's doing stand-up anymore?
We fell out of touch just because like, it was so many times of like trying to say, look, I can help you. But, and then, yeah, I would go out of my way. You know how hard it is to get gigs for yourself out here when you first move, you know, when you're here. Right when I started getting in with like the improv and, you know, even like, you know, Flappers and Comedy Magic, all the little clubs around here, you know, like the store, right when I started getting in at those places or getting a leeway or knowing people, like I would try to help this dude. Like, hey, and I'd be like, hey, I have a spot at the improv, you know, Saturday night. It's, you know, at 10:30, whatever, come on out. And he would show up just whacked out on Oxycontin there, you know? And I was like, Jesus, dude. And then, like, you know, a lot of other shit. It was just years of this. And so we fell out of touch, and it was just like, but yeah, I mean, I think that's what scared me away from that, was because I saw how bad it got. Like, I mean, there were nights I would, like, you know, a lot of times we work like small clubs in Texas where, like, the club would be in the side of a little hotel, you know? So thankfully the hotel room is attached, and, you know, I would have to carry him just, you know, after 10 double shots of tequila or 12, you know, just like almost have to half carry him to his room while he's just like picking fights with just random people. And it's just like, man. And I was like, dude, I don't want this. Like, this is not, you know, like, yeah. It's, and I think it was, I mean, hey man, I don't look, it just, you know, some people have it way easier than others. You can't get mad at that. He did, you know what I mean? Because he started with dudes that really blew up. And I think that really affected him, because he was way better than them, you know, but for whatever reason, you know, he just, you know, I just think that, like, it's all about perseverance, and you can't, like, you know, you can't blame yourself. You just have to keep attacking.
There's something in this business that I can't figure out. I was saying to someone last night I was drinking, and I thought, I'm in this place in my career where I'm like, all right, I'm like not, I'd be like, where do I want to do
right
next? Like, where do I want to go? I really enjoy this podcast, doing my vlog.
Sure.
I love stand-up. I love doing television. And then I flippantly said to somebody who's very successful in this business, maybe if I just quit drinking altogether, I'll become like a megastar. And they were like, you have no control over if you become a megastar. There's no control. Like, Kevin Hart can say he's the hardest working man in show business. That has nothing to do with it.
Nothing.
It has literally nothing to do with it.
Nothing.
You could say, sure, collecting email addresses and giving your digital presence be known.
But even then, there are dudes who've been doing that for years,
there's
Bert.
There's fucking guys that have been doing that.
And have an email list that comedy clubs would salivate over.
Hofstetter.
And they're not.
Steve Hofstetter is the hardest working man in show business.
Oh, my God. That dude is,
If you're going to say hard work begets Kevin Hart's career, then Steve Hofstetter
should be
not only
–
he should be Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
But
I mean, the guy owns comedy clubs. That's how crazy
he wakes up at 6 a.m. and starts working.
Yep.
And I don't think he's working stupid.
No, he's not.
And he's a fucking talented comic. It has nothing to do with hard work.
It just,
I mean, now granted, hard work plays into it.
It helps.
Like, if you don't work at all, it catches up to you.
But it just has to be that moment where, for whatever reason, one of the powers that be goes, oh, yeah, that's what we're looking for. And then boom. Yeah. And I think if you stay with it, one day you'll get that tap. You know,
like, I said to myself when I first started in this business, I thought, I saw all these people working together, and they were like, yeah, we started together. You know, I'm not saying the right names right now, but Gaffigan and I started on the same night.
And you're like,
oh, really? And like, yeah, and he just got a show. He just recommended me. And you're like, shut up. I saw, like, you know, Ray Romano flies out Dave Attell to punch up his scripts. He gets like $25,000 a week. And I'm like, shut up. And they're like, well, they started together. And I went, okay, so now if I just hang out long enough, one of these guys is going to take off.
That I started
off.
With, yeah. Right. It's like,
and
okay.
My money was on Dimitri Martin.
Right,
I was like, if that guy, he knows I'm funny. But he never helped me.
Oh, that fucking sucks, dick. Dude.
No, not that, like, what was I going to do for Dimitri? But
that's funny.
But it's, you know, you always saw that. And I think I said to Benson the other day, he was like, I've known Amy for so long. She hasn't put me in anything.
Right.
And in my head, I'm like, oh, like, I totally forgot. Oh, I got that lottery ticket still in the back. God forbid Amy gets put in a movie and they're like, we're looking for a 43-year-old balding fat guy who drinks too much, who's loud as shit.
Oh,
and
fuck.
Amy's like,
I know.
I got
Hold
the
on.
Guy. You know, you forget about that lottery ticket. Dane Cook, I went over to his house one time and he said, I'd gone over to his house. By the way, I'm paraphrasing this story into whatever my memory is. But I'd gone over to his house and we'd hung out and he had been depressed. And he was just like, not depressed, but he was like, dude, we should like start like a band of comics, like where we play in a band or something. I mean, you play, I play. Let's play. And we jammed a little bit. And then he was like, he was telling me about like, he was really kind of pitching me MySpace and I was so not uninterested in it. I can't tell you. I literally was like, he's like, no, this is because he'd like lean over to his computer and type into something. And I'd be like, what? And he's like, oh, I'm talking to my fans. And I was like, whatever. And then and he's like, I think we went and saw like maybe the new Star Wars at the time.
The prequels. Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, man, this business, it's like, you know, I'm doing good, but like, what the fuck? And then all of a sudden, I show up the next day, and he's like, dude, I got a call to be in a movie in China. And I was like, shut the fuck up. And he's like, that's what I love about this business. And by the way, Dane never puts this much energy into anything personally. But like, that's what I love about this business. I mean, yesterday, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing in my life, but today, I'm in a fucking movie.
It's crazy, right? Like, well, one night, I was just depressed. Bummed out, like thinking, man, what the fuck am I doing wrong? You know, and then I get a call from my manager and it was like, hey, you're taping Conan tomorrow. And it was like, all right, you know, like, okay, yeah. You know, it just those little things that just kind of like, oh, yeah, well, this is not so bad. You know, like, it's amazing how that stuff happens.
And it doesn't, you know, the road's not like that. The road is lunch pail comedy where you're like, I'm clocking in.
It is such the, that's why I tell like any comic, it's like, the road is fantastic. I love it. But you have to be either here or in New York. If you really want to try to make that next, you know, you have to be. I mean, a lot of guys get scared of that. They're like, they're like big fishes and they don't want to leave and they don't have to start over. And it's like, what are you afraid of? Like, this is what you want, right? Yeah. Like, fuck, who gives a shit? We all have to start over. You know, it's okay.
Oh, it's humiliating to go to a new city and say, hi, my name's Bert.
And then you
I'm
go bomb. Like, you're used to crushing, and then you walk on stage and bomb in, like, the comedy store, and you're like, oh, my God, this was, like, my dream to walk up on the comedy store and do its set, and then you just bomb for 3 minutes, and you're like, oh, all right.
I definitely feel that. I feel that today. I feel that today.
Absolutely.
When I go to, like, this, especially even when I go to the store, because I don't hang out there.
Right,
and
either.
I don't work there. But, like, when I go to the store, I feel like, fuck, I better do good.
Yeah.
I've got to introduce myself to everyone because no one knows who I am.
Right, man.
And how old were you when you moved out here?
It took me a minute. So when I was, I just stayed in Texas, not realizing that I could make
comedy
this a
until
career.
You were 22 in Texas.
And then that's when I started doing the road.
And then
I did the road until I was about, God, maybe even 28, you know, something like that. And then I came out here, stayed with my friend because the one I talked about, because he, time of his, finally he gotten a writing job on a show.
Really?
So he was doing good and then the show got canceled and then he was like, well, I don't know what I'm gonna do. He goes, and I, you know, I was, you know, like, he was like, I gotta move back to Texas. And I'm like, all right, well,
wait,
you know,
what the fuck, I gotta move back to Texas?
Yeah, it was. And then so he'd also had missed his girlfriend, like that, his ex. It was
that's fucking,
yeah. And then
that's
so
the death of fucking creativity,
right,
is love.
And so, yeah, and so he moved back and I was like, fuck, well, I didn't have any, I was working at like a T-Mobile store in Westwood. I was like, well, shit, I guess I gotta go back because I didn't have enough saved up to, you know, get a down payment on an apartment. It's like, all right, so I moved back to Texas, and then around, golly, is like 2005, around there, I think, I moved to New York. I went back to Texas.
This is right after we worked together.
Yeah, saved up a shit ton of money, just did every shitty gig, worked at a Barnes & Noble in Dallas, just took every shift possible. You know, they gave me 40 hours, and then they also let me go and just do comedy. I would take out day, I got to be off tomorrow, I got to do a one-nighter. You know, I saved up a bunch of bread, and I thought, let me try New York, you know, let me see what, and then went to New York, and was there. I had enough money to last me about a year. And that's how long I was there. And
how much cash?
It was about...
For someone who's wanting to do comedy and move to New York, what did you save up where you were like, I can do this?
A little over 12 grand.
Okay.
And I was like, you know what? I found the apartment. It was like, I found a place. It was $900 a month. I'm like, okay. And I heard that you can get paid doing comedy in New York, blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay. And so, and everything was going fine. In fact, I met who would end up being, you know, my best friend for the rest of his life, Mike DiStefano, there at Mikey D. I met him. Yeah. Then, like, so I go to New York. I was in there for about a couple of weeks. And I wasn't doing anything. Like, how you was, you know, I just kind of like, well, I don't know. I was trying to make a battle plan. How am I going to attack this? And then I had just worked with Stanhope at the Improv in Addison. Mm-hmm. And he called me and he goes, hey, are you in New York? And I'm like, yeah. He goes, well, I'm headlining Caroline's next week. Come and feature for me. And I was like, holy shit.
Oh, what a fucking
it
blessing.
Was great. And then so, I mean, I bombed the whole.
Right then, that's your lottery ticket moment.
Like, boom.
Where you're like, all right, I'm back.
I can do this.
Try to pass at Caroline's.
Yep. And then it worked. The booker, I didn't, I mean, the shows were so, you know,
yeah.
But like, I didn't do so hot, but like, it was all right. But booker loved me. And I remember the night, so one night I walk up and there's this girl's walking down. I think she was a comic from New York and she was with DiStefano. And I'd never met Mike. I didn't know who he was. I just saw this just very intimidating looking Italian dude, just with huge arms, just walking.
He was a very sweet guy.
He was the kindest guy. But so, the girl goes, hey, are you one of the comedians? I was like, oh, yeah. And I start to introduce myself. And Mike goes, yeah, I know who the fuck you are. You better be fucking funny. And that's all he said to me. And I just was like, oh God. And then I go up and I bomb for like 25 minutes. And I'm thinking, who was that guy? I didn't know who he was. I thought just some angry audience member. I was like, yeah. Jesus, like, why is this guy so pissed coming into a club? And then I walk to the back and he's sitting in the green room and he just smiles and gives this giant hug. Goes, dude, fuck that crowd. I thought you were fucking hysterical. Doug and I were fucking laughing. And I was like, oh, he's a comic. And then he was like, yeah, I was only mad at you because I wanted the gig. I was mad that Doug gave you the gig and not me.
Oh, yeah.
And then so I fucking hated you when I first met you. But he goes, no, I love you, man. You're great. And then so he said, come by this club tomorrow night. And then so I went in. And we became like instant best friends, and like we were just inseparable for the next like 9 months that I lived in New York. And like I had this nagging feeling that because before I moved to New York, when I was still living here, I got passed at the Improv. You know what I mean? Like a couple little things were like, oh, I could, you know,
yeah.
And that was always biting at me, you know. And I was like, you know, because I personally thought that like no matter how great it goes in New York, you're probably still gonna have to come out here. That's and true. So it was like, if I already have a little bit of an in, and I would call the Improv, you know, and just keep in touch and be like, hey, you know, I'm still here. Even when they got a new booker, I'm like, yeah, it was passed, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, that's so smart. I never did any of that. I don't even know who's booking the Improv right now.
Right, like, I stayed on them, and I was like, fuck. So I just, you know, and then they're like, no, yeah, we remember you, man. You're cool. And so, you know, like, I just thought, you know, let me try LA again. So I moved back to Texas for about a year, saved up more bread, and then came back out here. And you know, I've been here since. And like,
so what year did you move out here? I remember the first time I saw you out here, I was like,
yeah,
hey, man, what are you doing?
So it was a little bit. I was here in 2007.
Yeah.
For about a year. And then I was in an awful relationship with this crazy, evil piece of shit. So I dumped her, went back home just to kind of recharge my batteries a little bit, and yeah. Then moved back in like 8 or 9 months after that. So I think around 2009 is when I was like,
the fucking key to being successful in this business is having a partner that's like 100% supportive.
That's all you need. It's crazy.
It's hard enough to get parents that are supportive.
Fuck,
but
man.
I dated a chick who was so supportive of me getting into comedy. And then one day I was living in New York. I wasn't doing shit. I was there for 7 months. I'm guessing 7 months, but probably I could probably figure it out exactly. I moved there in June. Yeah, I was there about 7 months not doing shit.
Yeah.
Because November, I moved there in June, probably June, right? Is that when school ends?
Right around. Yeah,
I moved
about
there in June.
Because May, July, usually graduation
August,
is in May. So yeah.
June, July. August, September, October. I was there 6 months.
Wow.
And within that 4 months where I was there, we broke up, and she told me, you know, maybe it's not going to happen. I remember
a
couple uncles called my mom and said to my mom, you know, when's he going to give up on this? It's been 4 fucking months. And my mom's like, he's going to stick with it. And they were like, you know, if it doesn't happen, you know, then, you know, he should know. So then, and then she was like, my dad get you a job selling boats. And I was like,
oh, how fun.
I was like, wait, you can't do that. I was like, fuck it. And then I got into STEM, and then I got a deal 6 months in, and everyone that was like, maybe you should give up was like, see, I told you you should give up.
Right.
But. After that chick, I said I'm doing this alone. Yeah. I don't want anyone in my life to fucking.
It's tough,
cause
right?
I will succumb to a girl saying, "Move back to Orlando. I love you."
Right.
Whenever you want it.
Right.
I'm that guy. I do it.
Well, that's why I left that chick, because it was starting to get to the point. I was like, you know what? This is fucking my career up. Like, I was started missing gigs because
this is fucking my career up.
And so I was like, you know what? So I thought, you know what? I can't stay here because again, we were splitting the rent, all that kind of shit. And I was like, fuck, I can't afford getting a place right now. So what happened was, like, when I realized I should probably leave her, my car gets totaled. And I was like, motherfucker, I was fucked. And I was like, oh, shit. And I luckily had gotten a gig.
Oh, it's like the universe challenging you.
Yeah, I was like, what are you going to do, bitch? And I was like, okay. So my car gets totaled. It was the other guy tried to beat a light and make a left turn as everyone else is going. And he hit me. And then this fucking piece of shit, I think the guy lived in the neighborhood, and his friend, like a neighbor, just was walking. And he ran up, even though the cop said it was his fault, everything. He runs up and says, no, you ran a red light. I'm like, I was fucking great. Like, yeah. he was the witness who fucked everything. So because of the cops and the witness, it just fought. It was a stalemate. So nobody got anything out of it, you know? And so I was like, well, fuck it. And then so I was like, shit, I'm toast. Like, that's it. I'm fucked. I was like, well, what am I going to do? I can't stay with this crazy piece of shit. I have to get out of here. And then I gotten a gig. I had a gig booked for Go Bananas in Cincinnati to headline and flew down there. Got the money, the headlining gig money, flew back home, and the day I got back, I cashed a check, and I walked to a Toyota dealership that was near my apartment, and I just sat down. I did the math, right? And I said, okay, I need a couple of hundred to drive back home to Texas, and I said, here's $1,200. I don't have any credit, but what can you do? And they got me a new car, you know what I mean? And I was like, fine, I just drove it home, and that was it. I just packed my
serious?
Shit. Yeah, drove it back to Texas.
Oh, man, this sounds shitty to say, but like,
no.
That's a moment in your life where in the moment you're really fucking sad and this sucks, but don't you look back at it and you're like, fuck, man. That's like a fucking survivor moment.
It was so badass. It was like, holy
it's
shit.
It's like a fucking light the room on fire.
I did it.
I'm walking out.
Yeah.
Here's $1,200. I need to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. And then so I got the car. I packed my shit. I drive home.
It must have been a sad trip, but
it was brutal.
But it's empowering. Like, it's what changed you.
I didn't sleep. I drove the whole drive. I did like 23 hours just from Los Angeles to actually, I was in Houston, if I'm not mistaken, because I was working with Coco Diaz. He was at the Houston Improv, and I told him the whole situation. He goes, well, fuck, I'll be in Texas. Come work with me.
Yeah.
So I worked with Joey, and then it was great because it was a little bit of bread, you know? Yeah. And then I just stayed with my family in South Texas, and then I would float back and forth. I would stay with friends. I would go between Dallas and Laredo, which was about an 8-hour, you know, a 6-hour trip. But I would spend a couple of weeks in Dallas staying with friends or a girl I was dating. And I got a job at I got my old job back at the bookstore, you know, and then so
Barnes and Noble.
Yeah, so
I worked
for about,
at Barnes and Noble.
Oh, fucking A, man.
Yeah.
So for about 9 months.
I was there when they instituted the new pulling up books by their VIN number, PIN number.
Yeah, that's
right.
ISBN. Yeah.
I was the first
bookmaster.
I was the very first store to get that.
Nice.
Yeah,
New York.
Yeah, New York.
Yeah.
We were the very first store to get that. And they were like, everyone's gonna be working off of this.
Right.
And I was like, oh, interesting. When I got the job at Barnes and Noble, I thought it was like, this is gonna be great. I'll read nonstop.
I'll
drink coffee, and then fucking that's not how it We should do a show called I Worked at Barnes and Noble.
Dude, I'm not bragging. I really am not. I don't know how it happened. Dude, I somehow cleaned up on the employees when I worked there. It was with the chicks. Because we had a cafe, so we go like make out in the freezer room.
Oh, shut the fuck up.
In the countdown room and shit. When you bring your dude, it was hot.
So wait, I interrupted you. So you drive back. You stay with family.
Stay with my family. Stay with friends. And then I did Laredo and Dallas. So I would float between Barnes and Noble and the road. You know, and I would just like I did before in New York. And then so I did that for about 9 months. And this time I didn't save up nearly as much bread, but I kept calling again the improvs and that girl Emily, who now works at the Comedy Store, who's just been the best. And I was like, hey, you know, she was the assistant to Eric, the booker at the time. And I'm like, hey, just wanted to check in. She said, look, you're fine. You know, like you always have a home here. Just, you know, so I was like, all right, good. And then so I come back, right? I come back to LA. I find this apartment, the one I'm still at now, you know, and it was a great deal. I found it. It was great. I love this neighborhood. You know, it's a tiny apartment. I love where we live. You know, it's a great. And then I just started getting feature weeks at the improvs. And that's why I didn't need as much bread. You know what I mean? Because I already had a couple of, you know, gigs lined up to get rent. And that's what I did. I was like, fuck it. Let me just do this. And so I moved back and I've been here since. But I mean, that's the thing. It's like, it's so hard. Like you said, you never know when it's going to happen. So you just have to stick with it. And that I knew when I left her. I was like, I can't stay here, but I know I'm coming back. You know, a lot of people don't come back. They leave and they stay gone, you know, but
it's
I was like,
hard.
I have to come back. Yeah.
It's very hard to get away from LA and then come back.
Oh, man. It's the hardest thing. The only thing harder than moving to LA for the first time is moving to LA for the second or the third time. That's way harder.
A joke. That's a joke.
Right? But it's true, man. It's way harder.
That's a joke that only works in LA, but that's a joke that would murder in LA.
I should try that, huh?
Because you're right. You know, it's so funny. My wife said something really insightful one night. We were going to a going away party for a friend of hers. And I said, I don't want to go. I go, this is sad.
Right.
Like, this is someone who gave up. This is someone who gave up on his dreams. He's moving home. Like, I don't, going away parties everywhere in the world are so great, but in LA, they're really depressing. You're like,
I would never throw one. Dude, if I had to move back, I would never throw, hey, you want to come see me? No.
Want to see me pack my shit?
Yeah. Like, I'd be like, fuck.
Along
that.
With my dreams and my car.
It's the worst thing. Like, that I wouldn't tell fucking anybody.
Yeah.
I'd be like, oh, hey, Bert, yeah. Oh, you're in Dallas this weekend at the theater? Oh, well, yeah, I live here now. That's what I would do it. I'd be like, oh, yeah, I've been here for like 2 months, you know?
Yeah, my mom got sick. I didn't take care of her.
Exactly.
And she said,
I would
to me,
give you the biggest
was,
lie.
She was like, no. She goes, this is my wife's a definite out of the box glass half full thinker, hardcore. But she goes, I'm celebrating his bravery. I said, why? She goes, it's the bravest thing in the world to decide that you don't want this.
Right.
Because everyone looks at it as you gave up, but it's not giving up. It's welcoming a new part of your life.
Right.
And I was like, oh shit! But I was like, I can't. I don't have that brain.
That is like the best way to spin it, but I still don't buy it. You know what I mean?
Tap or snap guy.
Yeah.
Like fucking, I am fucking nose into the storm. Like that's the way I look at this business. You do not give up. You
can't.
Even if I have a fucking sex tape where I'm having sex.
And you're calling her every racial slur under the sun. You know what I mean?
Yeah, with some chick that isn't my wife and there's a dude in there.
She's 14.
Throwing fucking money at us and it just is. I'm still showing at the clubs. Going, right. I'm not done, guys. I still have more I want to talk about.
I can do this.
Like, this is not, yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I love the lottery ticket style of this city, of this business. I mean, I love having my phone with me and then knowing, like, the last podcast I did, one of my producers called me, and he's like, hey,
good news?
No, not good news. Oh, yeah, good news. But, like, this is how great the business is. Christopher Titus just texted me.
Nice.
Hey, man, I want to do the podcast.
Oh, so, that's awesome.
That's how great this business
is. That's killer,
Christopher
dude.
Titus, who... When I got my first deal, they were producing his show.
Mm.
And, I mean, he is one of those guys that to this day, everyone's like, he does stand-up different than everyone. Like, he does it. He is a true, unique voice.
I worked with him one time in El Paso.
Really?
And it was just like, I've never seen somebody just like, I don't know how to explain it. That set he did came across as like the funniest self-help seminar. It was weird. It was just like empowering to people, but it was mega funny. It was really interesting. It was tremendous.
But like, that's the weird thing about this business is that, you know, like, I don't know, there's little victories. And if you can look at little victories, and I think that I don't know. What do you want to do?
Anything. I love it all.
My wife believes in saying what you want out loud and then it comes to you.
Sure.
Like I would like to be doing theaters.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm cool with doing clubs. Actually, I'm cool with doing clubs for the rest of my life, maybe.
Love
like,
clubs.
But I'd love to do theaters only because it would be less work with more money.
More money, yeah, of course.
And I'd really
be stupid now. If you had the opportunity, you have to take it. Yeah.
I'd like to continue the path of creating my own content and putting it online. Yeah. I really enjoy that. I'd like to stay at Travel Channel for fucking 40 years.
Yeah.
I want to die at Travel Channel.
That was my first ever gig.
Really?
They did this show called American Journeys where they would follow people who made a living on the road. And they wanted to do one on a comedian. And I submitted a tape. My buddy Ben and I, from high school, we just submitted a tape. I was like in my early 20s. I was at Barnes & Noble. I'll never forget. There was a payphone by the bathroom. And I would go to the payphone every afternoon. And I said, every week. They said, every week, call us. So I called, like, well, we have over 200-something applicants or 2,000 applicants. We're looking at every tape. But thank you for calling. Call us. You made the next cut. And then finally, we're going to use you. And I was like, holy shit. So my buddy and I, we drove from Dallas to Davenport, Iowa, where I was hosting. And they just did
at Penguins?
No, it was the Funny Bone up there. It was amazing. And like, I totaled my best friend's car right when the documentary crew guys, there's this Australian crew, and they're like, you know, why don't we have Jerry drive? And like, what was funny was I was used to my mom. I didn't have my own car. I had my mom's big old clunky Chevy, which like you had to really turn that you had to really turn that wheel to get. And I'm in my friend's brand new Jetta, and I didn't realize that. the steering wheel was far more sensitive than my mom's car. And so we're getting on I-75 in Dallas, and the camera crew's following us, and I just spin us out, and we smash into a garbage truck and all this shit.
Shut the fuck up.
We were complete. We were like, and that's how you know this guy's like your brother, because like we're so close that like we're both somehow not even a scratch in the both airbags, everything, not even a scratch, and we're getting a drive from the tow truck driver who came to take us. So you know, within another hour and a half, the company, you know, we got to rent a car and we're off doing it again.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know what, mate, Jerry's not going to drive. You know, how about we have Ben drive the rest of the trip? And I was like, and then so, but like, so as we're, this tow truck guy is taking us, he's just telling us like out of the blue, like, hey, y'all lucky. He goes, y'all lucky. He goes, one time I pick up a baby dead, and it looked like somebody just took a thing of ketchup and smashed that shit on the windshield, a dead baby everywhere. And I mean, we're just trying not to laugh. We're just like, oh my God. You know,
holy shit.
I had like, he just kept describing this dead baby that splattered on the windshield. Oh, and he was just getting more and more graphic. And I don't know why, but my friend and I were like, you know how it is with your friend? Like, if I make eye contact, we're going to die laughing.
Oh, yeah.
So I had to turn, and I had like the seatbelt like bunched up and just shoved it in my mouth like a torture ball. I was like, okay. We're not gonna just bite down. Don't laugh. Bite down.
Wait,
like,
what happened? What happened to that guy, Ben? Is he still?
No. He was never a comic. He was just my buddy. They just said they were like, hey, kid, because they said, do you mind bringing a friend with you? That'd be kind of fun to have like a two-person dynamic. Do you have a buddy? Because I was younger, you know. And I was like, yeah, my best friend Ben. And so we just did it. And he had just started a job, but he'd been there long enough that he could take a little bit of time off of work. And you know, he took off a week, and we just went and did it. And it was great. Like we had a blast. Like it was so much fun. But yeah, like I totaled this car day one, but it was for the Travel Channel. Never forget it. That was my first ever TV credit, anything.
Yeah, that's what I'd like to stay there for like 40 years. I'd like to do scripted.
Yeah.
I'd like to do scripted, not because I know that I'd love it,
right,
but because I'd like to try.
Yeah.
I'd like to, I mean, to be dead honest with you, if I'm actually enjoy, meaning like the time spent making the shows I make for Travel Channel,
yeah,
I enjoy that time the most right now. I can't imagine. And I think this to myself, I can't imagine that I'd enjoy scripted more, but I'd like to try to find out.
Dude, I don't see how all the shows you've done for them, it just looks like you're having the time of your life.
I have the greatest time of my life.
It's so much fun.
I literally have the greatest time of my life, and I work with the greatest people, and I laugh nonstop.
Have you ever gotten seriously hurt?
Yeah.
Is it scared? Are we scared? Were you like, nah, fuck it, like it's part of it?
Beyond
like-
seriously hurt. I fell off a waterfall.
Jesus,
and I fell on my back, and I couldn't...
Was that for Conker, or was that for Herbert?
That was for Trip Flip.
Trip Flip. Yeah. Oh, dude. Yeah.
And so I fell off a waterfall like 15 feet, landed on my back, and I was like, and I couldn't.
Fuck.
I couldn't. Not only could I not breathe because it hurt to breathe, but it was like I didn't know if I broke my spine, and I didn't know if I ruptured my kidneys, and
you're okay,
I had to
thankfully crawl
Revenant style.
Yeah,
I had to crawl out of a canyon.
Fuck.
And it's so funny. We watched the Revenant. We watched The Revenant the other night.
Good.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's great. But there's a moment where he's like crawling, and I said to my wife, I go, I empathize with that feeling. She's like, you were never attacked by a bear like that. And I was like, no, you don't fucking know. Yeah, I've been hurt. But it's, you know, you're going to get hurt. That just accidents happen. It has nothing to do with the network. It has nothing to do with
production or
anything. It's just...
What was the one you did that was... I love the one where it was like... then that little mud hole thing where you're like...
Oh, redneck water.
Dude, that was so badass.
I drank a big gallon of water that day out of that pool of that cows were just shitting in. And I was like, this is how you get fucking sick and die.
Yeah.
And I remember saying that to the people there whose kids were throwing mud at each other.
And that's like shit. That's like half shit.
And
this
one mom was like, you know what, guys? Out of the mud.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, there's probably like bacteria in here. But God. Like, what do you want to do? What would you love? What would, like, if there was a phone call that you could get today that would just be like.
It would be to have my own single camera scripted sitcom, right? Yeah. But like, you know, more R-rated.
Like Jim Jeffries?
Yeah, something that would be like on, you could put on Netflix or like HBO or Showtime. Yeah. I mean, hey, if a network, a major network, well, sure, I'm not stupid.
That's what everyone says. You're like, yeah, I definitely would do a network.
I mean, I'm not dumb, but like
but if, your voice is probably
more
suited. Right,
it's way more suited for something that's like a little smaller, more focused audience, right?
Yeah.
And like, I would love that. I would love to make a movie, you know, all that kind of shit. But all it does, movie and TV would be tremendous. I would love to just have my own sitcom, you know, write a script about something like I actually wrote a screenplay about the year I spent with that crazy chick, and I think it's pretty funny, you know, whatever. Yeah. I would love to have that get made, that kind of shit. But I just still want to do stand-up, though, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if I ever don't feel, but I one thing I'm kind of worried about is getting so famous that you quit doing it. You get what I mean? Like how Eddie Murphy just like, yeah, you know, I don't need this anymore.
I don't know.
And it's like, man, I don't ever want to. I mean,
I don't think it has anything to do with fame. I think it has to do with money.
Yeah.
I think it has to do with money and hunger. Like, it's really hard.
Like, I'm surprised that Kevin Hart still puts out specials, because you would think this guy does not need the money and he's probably not that.
I think Kevin is an anomaly in this business.
Yeah.
I think he says when he's the hardest working man in show business, I think he just is very driven. He has to be. I can't see. I mean, I know him, and I remember when he started, but I wouldn't say that he was the most overly driven person when I saw him in the clubs. But like, I think he's one of those guys that just is like, I mean, I think all of us would be like that, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I think if you give me a fucking major motion picture and I can sell out arenas and I can make $20 million a year, I'd be like, fuck yeah, put me on the road.
Would you do like some, like, because, you know, I work with Iglesias a bunch, you know, Gabe, and that same thing. The dude's out there in like fucking hockey arenas. Well, selling out.
It becomes obsessive compulsive. You it's become like, obsessive about it because I'll tell you what, this last year I worked, I don't think I had, my wife did the math, but I think I had maybe like one weekend off.
Yeah.
Like one weekend off. Like, wow. Like a weekend. I worked straight. I did two series. I did stand up the entire time.
Nice.
I did my podcast.
See, that's a dream, man.
But the thing is, I got obsessed with making money.
Yeah.
Like, I just was like, I'll do it all. I was like, I'll fucking shoot the travel show in Atlanta. I'll do the Atlanta improv. I'll shoot the travel show in DC. Do the Baltimore improv. Yep. Do the Baltimore, whatever that club is. And then I was obsessed with, I was like, fuck, if I'm on the road, I'm working.
Yeah.
And then I just, this December, I took all of December off, all of it.
Did it feel good?
It was, I don't want to go back to work. I'm like so fucking centered.
Yeah.
I'm not a fucking mess. I don't have stomach problems.
Right.
My pancreas isn't hurting anymore. I'm just like, really fucking grounded. I mean, I sat in the man cave last night, smoked a cigar, drank wine, and listened to music. I haven't done that in fucking forever.
That's nice.
Like, just got fucking weird. I've put out 17 episodes of this vlog that I started.
Nice.
I've posted, I think, 7 podcasts in the month. I've had more interesting conversations with people this last month and a half than I think I had all year, probably.
It's nice. I'm starting to do a vlog thing. And again, the thing is hard to not get discouraged for me. You know, because again, it's like, oh, I only have like 80 views. Jesus, this sucks.
Do you have the channel right now?
It's a YouTube channel.
What's your YouTube channel?
It's just my name, just Jerry Rocha.
Jerry Rocha. Yeah. And your Twitter is Jerry A. Rocha, right?
Yes. No, I switch it. It's Rocha Comedy.
Rocha Comedy.
That'd be easier. Yeah, Rocha Comedy.
It was a little confusing.
Yeah, it's like Jerry and I fucking
Rocha Comedy.
Because like, Jerry Rocha is taken. There's some fucking cell phone salesman in Atlanta. And I was like, are you kidding? Or something easy, but yeah.
What's your vlog? What do you do?
I have one called Dumb It Down, where I just take like nerdy shit and like jokingly badly try to explain it, like Star Wars or video games. And then I just have another one called Why the Fuck Not, where I just talk about, you know, whatever. One of them, I made a bit, and I want to see the movie, but everyone was saying how great The Revenant was, but all I saw from the trailer, it just looked like a gritty Yosemite Sam story, and I was like, they might as well just call it the Yosemite Sam story, because he kind of looked like Yosemite Sam.
He does look
like
that.
It was like, and he won the Golden Globe the other night, but all they showed was just him like, he killed me, so I'm gonna kill him, and I was like, how is he winning an Oscar for this?
By the way, that's kind of the thing.
Yeah, I was like, how is he going to win an Oscar just for, he killed me, so I got to go kill him. Ooh, that rascal, that rabbit. You know? And I was like, it just seemed
How
like,
often do you release your vlogs?
I try doing one every Monday. So here's what I do. I'll take, because I have a little podcast, and it's just me. It's called the ramble because I just ramble in my room. I just talk shit if I'm on the road.
Great.
And so I'll either take like what I think is like a funny little snippet from that, and I'll put it up. I try to put something up every Monday. You know, yeah. Something.
I think the way vlogs work.
Yeah.
And I would suggest this.
Yeah.
Like the more often you put them up, the more traction they get.
Ah, really? So yeah. Try to do it like a couple times a week, maybe.
A podcast has got to be once a week.
Right.
Because it's such long-form content that people are cool with you being in their rotation. Like, I listen to Maron, Rogan, Bert, Joey, Ari. Like, that's how they work it. And they're like, so... But a vlog, they're best when they're daily.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
If I were you, I would do an experiment. I know that my vlog right now is like biweekly.
Sure.
Only because I do so much editing in it that I'm like, I don't have the fucking
man hours.
I would love to get a fucking producer, or like an editor, like a real editor who I could give it to.
Hey, make this.
And just be like, here's my string out. Can you put this together?
Right.
But try 1 week or try for a month. Say, because there's a guy named Casey Neistat who did it every day for a year, and he's like probably one of the biggest vloggers out there.
Nice.
And he's like, I'm going to do a vlog every single day. Challenge yourself and go, I'm going to do a vlog every day of February, and I'm going to do another, like, I'm going to do a brand new 5-minute rant on a subject, or I'm going to do a dumb it down, and try it every day and see if you don't grab a little traction.
I'll try that. I think
that's the way they work the best.
Right.
Especially if you're doing like a single camera type thing. I think those ones are best suited for like daily vlogs.
Yeah, it makes sense. That's true. Because it's easier to get lost in the shuffle of a vlogs once a week.
People want to check in with you and go, what is today about?
Right.
I watch Casey Neistat's vlog every single day. Every day I watch it.
Nice.
Because I go, and it's a weird little serotonin drip where you're like, oh, I'm fucking tired. I'm hungover. I'm taking a shit.
Yesterday. That's true. That's a really good point.
Yeah, I would try that. Ideally, like to do your own single camera show would be like
I would love that, man. That'd be so much fun. Yeah. And it's kind of inspired. It's good to see guys like Maron get one now, you know, where it's like, okay, it is bullshit. You don't have to be 23.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, you always hear that, like,
hear a 23-year-old comic speak.
God. Yeah. It's like, what are these idiots? I mean, no offense, but I'm sure there's some hysterical ones. There's a lot of Pete Davidson is another anomaly. That kid is on
SNL.
He's so fucking funny. And you're just like, God, this kid's like 22 and he's a beast, you know, to me, he's like a rare exception because most young comedians, like, dude, what do you know? Like, what? Yeah. Just shut up, you know. But like, and you always hear like, that's what they want. They want kids, and I don't believe that. I just think those are
they do. There's people that there's, you know, there's so many outlets these days.
Yeah,
there's so many outlets that when I got in the business, and you got a deal, and they're like, fuck, of course he's 26. Of course he got a deal.
Right.
I'm fucking too old. I'm 35.
Right.
I mean, there were guys that were in their 30s that were like, fucking, oh, that's it. My career's over. And like, honestly, I mean, it sounds shitty, but like, Maron 50 right now?
Yeah.
Like, Maron was, when I was getting deals, Maron was like, at that point in his career, was like, the fuck am I going to do?
Right.
I'm getting old. Like, but he just changed the business.
He's like, fuck it. I'll make a podcast something that you have to acknowledge as a force of nature.
Yeah.
And it was crazy.
Like, now those guys dictate. When I got a deal, there were 3 networks and there were like, 4 cable providers you could go to.
Amazing.
WB, UPN.
Yeah.
I was talking to someone about this the other day.
USA was USA, like it.
Yeah.
It was it.
And FX.
And
that was it.
Yeah.
Now you've got fucking Netflix, Amazon, Yahoo,
there's
fucking
so many
YouTube,
avenues.
ABC, NBC, CBS, fucking the CW. There's so many avenues to take content.
It's crazy, man.
And there's so many eyes. Like, you know, the other thing was, I believe people were different back then. Like, once you were 40 in 99, you were like, I think I'm good, guys.
Bye-bye now. Yeah.
I'm not going to be learning about the internet. I mean, and now you look at it and you're like, I'm fucking 43. I feel young as shit.
Yeah, man.
I go into the store and I'm like, I'm still a young comic. Like,
yes.
Don't ever think I'm not. When I go to Flappers, I may do the road a lot, but don't think I'm not a young comic. I'm an experienced comic. I've been doing it for a long time.
I know what you mean, man.
I know what I'm doing, but I'm not fucking old.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. No, it's true.
I can't believe that.
Yeah, and it's like, that's what I love about, like you said, just, you know, that's why it's like seeing Maron get his show. It's like, okay, good. So you don't have to be some 22-year-old boy band pretty right. kid. It's like, okay, you can actually be experienced and have real shit to talk about and get through. And Mikey D was in that. He was going on that same path. You know, sadly, we lost him. But, you know, like he was, you know, he was getting a lot of heat.
And all stroke?
The, heart attack.
Heart attack?
Yeah, yeah.
Jesus Christ.
He was, God, he was, that was the roughest.
I'll beat AIDS, though.
He beat AIDS. That was the roughest day. It was. He would always say that. When he would come visit me, like, I would drive him around, and I'm one of these people, like, I'm so bad about it. I got a lot better about it now. Wait, but
tell
like,
everyone for that doesn't know about yeah. Mike.
Mike was the funniest. Like, he was from the Bronx. He was this Italian comedian who just was just the most honest comic you'll ever see. Like, it just, there was nothing about him that was pretentious. There was no, like, he, and he, to his detriment, to his credit, like, he would, like, there was a night when this guy came up to a show, this comedian, and he would talk shit. He was like bragging about how funny he is and all this stuff. And then he goes, I don't even remember the guy's name, just some dude who's like, and he goes upstage and he bombs. And he still is acting cocky. And he goes, hey, so what'd you guys think? And Mike goes, I think you should throw yourself down a flight of fucking stairs because that was fucking terrible. And the guy was like mortified. But that's yeah. how Mike was just like, he would punch audience members. Like I saw him. He literally just knocked the fuck out of a heckler after a show.
Really?
He knocked the shit out of the guy. It was great. Like he was just, but I mean, yeah, he was just so funny. Everything about him was like honest and raw and just like, he had this, I mean, there's so many things that he would do. I have a million Mikey D stories. I'll tell you my favorite one, if you don't mind.
Yeah, no, please.
He never got to tell this joke on stage, or at least record it, which is such a shame. But you know his story. I'll tell it to everybody who doesn't know. He's a very funny comedian, but for most of his life, he was a heroin addict.
Yeah.
And him, his wife, and his best friend all got AIDS from sharing a needle one day. And his wife and his best friend both die. The HIV just kind of went dormant in Mike's system. So it was there, but he couldn't even really – it got to the point in his life where he couldn't really even give it to anybody. It had yeah. to be like a miracle for him to give HIV to somebody, to some girl he had sex with. You know what yeah. I mean? Like he, of course, he would always tell every girl, look, yeah. here's a deal. You know, we're wearing-
I knew a girl he dated from Cleveland who was really fucking cool.
Maria.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
she
yeah,
was
yeah.
great.
She was great, yeah. And he's – and Mikey was like, I mean, you know, all the people that were really close to Mike, we all will still hit each other up every now and again. It was just, you know, yeah. You know, I still talk to his brother all the time. And, you know, like he was, but Mike, yeah, he got it, you know, he got it, but nothing came out of it from him.
Yeah.
His wife and his best friend both die of AIDS, very close to each other. Then about 6 months after that, his father dies of cancer. So he just quits heroin. And starts doing stand-up. Like he started in his mid to late 30s. And he was like, fuck it. This is all right. And then so he just, you know, and so he made a living, though, before he started to take off as a comic. And he still did it even after he kind of hit as a comedian, is he would do drug counseling. He would talk about drugs at colleges. And
I saw him on a fucking show on A&E one time.
Yeah.
About that. Yeah.
And so he has this dude. I'm so pissed he didn't do this on stage, but or at least it get recorded, you know. But he told this story where he did a very religious college. And he said the person who booked him gave him this laundry list of shit he couldn't talk about. Like, you can't condone homosexuality. You can't condone the usage of condoms. And he's like, he was already mad. So what, Mike was the type of guy, once you tell him, hey, you can't do this, well, guess what I'm going to do, you know? And so yeah. he was like, well, fuck you, you know? And then so he, so instead he went and the lady was, the one who booked, she was watching him. And the kids, he said, for whatever reason, I think some of the students had already knew he was a comedian.
Yeah.
So like they were kind of in on it. And so he walked up and they were trying not to laugh and he was too. But he called me right after it happened. He just called me from the college and he goes, he tells me the story. And he said, I had a demon. I need to talk about a demon that afflicted me. This demon was called heroin. And he goes, this demon infected my life for 15 years. It ruined me. And then he goes, and this demon infected my wife and my best friend, and it infects so many people, and this demon is an evil thing. And he goes, and one day my wife and my best friend, we were so affected by this demon, so controlled by it, that we did heroin and we shared needles with other people, and it gave myself, my wife, my best friend, we all got HIV. And he goes, my wife and my best friend passed away. He goes, the HIV remained dormant in my system, and I'm still here today. He goes, because the Lord shone his light onto me. And he allowed me to be free of this demon. And the Lord came down and he wiped this addiction away. If he's telling the story, he wipes this addiction away from me, the Lord. And he goes and he washed all my sins for me. And he's like, and now I'm free of this demon. And that's why I'm here to talk to you, because I have a purpose. You know, the Lord gave me a purpose. That's why he cured AIDS, because from he cured my AIDS to give me a purpose, because I had a purpose for the Lord. And then he paused and he goes, my wife, she didn't really serve him any purpose. So he went ahead and let her die of AIDS. But I had a purpose.
She didn't serve any purpose. So she let die of AIDS.
So he went ahead and let her die of AIDS. And then, like, and the lady gets up and leaves, right? And then once she walks out, Mike's like, all right, is that fucking twat gone? All right. And then the crowd, the kids love it. He starts talking. And then she wasn't offended. She had to leave because some obligation. And she comes up to him afterwards and right over her head. She was like, that was the most beautiful speech. She didn't buy it at all. So weird.
Up.
And I was like, Mike, you got to tell that on stage. And I think he did a couple times, but it was never recorded. But there was nothing funnier than that line. Like, yeah, she didn't really serve him any purpose.
God.
So he went ahead and let her die of AIDS. But that was Mike. He was like,
he was a really good storyteller.
Amazing.
I heard him tell
amazing.
A story about seeing his wife in hospice.
The Franny's Last Ride. Where he broke her out to ride her around on his Harley one last time. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was amazing. Like, he was, I miss him every day. It sucks. We were so close. Like, we would talk every day. And it's just like, it was a bummer, man. That was a rough. I was in Atlanta doing a gig. I'll tell you this, because I'm not religious, right? I don't know if you are. I don't know. Like, I don't want to be. But, like, and there's nothing wrong. You know, hey, one thing that was very odd to me was, the night he passed away. So I'm working in Atlanta. I fly home. I took a red eye, right? And so I land. It was like at 8, 9 in the morning, right, in LA, at LAX. And I wake up. And no, it wasn't running. It was like the flight left at like 5 in the morning, right?
Yeah.
So it felt like, But like, and so I got to LA at like 8 in the morning, whatever, at 9. And I just wake up and I'm in the back of the plane. I slept the whole flight and I'm in the very back of the plane and I just turn on my phone and then like 100 text messages. I'm so sorry. How are you? Are you okay? Do you need to talk? And I'm like, what the fuck happened? And then right as that happened, my phone rings and another comic, Daryl Wright, really, he knew Mike too. He calls me up. Yeah. He's crying, goes, tell me it's not true. And I'm like, dude, I just got off a plane. What? Hey, goes, Mikey, we lost Mikey. And I was like, I couldn't even move, you know. Luckily, everyone had already left the plane.
Yeah.
And then I just start bawling. And then the stewardess come over and they're like, hey, we don't need to take off for a minute. So if you need to stay here, you're fine.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, oh, thanks. I kind of, took me a couple of minutes to kind of compose myself. And I'm walking out. And then I go home. It was, it was brutal. But what was so weird was when Mike was on Last Comic Standing, we did that season together. He was out here and we went to go see a friend of his. And who lived in like North Hollywood area, and we're going by her and her husband's house, and and Mike saw a coyote, because that can happen out here, right?
I saw a coyote walking down my street one day.
Right, it's crazy, and he lost his shit. Mike was like, what the fuck? He wanted to go try to keep it.
Yeah.
Like, he was literally like, I want to catch that fucking thing. It was this huge one, beautiful. And he's like, dude, I fucking want that thing, man. He was trying to, literally, we circled around. He kept following it, like trying to see where it was going. He was obsessed with, and all he talked about was this coyote he saw. He just thought it was the coolest thing. He was just in love with it. And then, so I'm in Atlanta, and it was like the show ends, and I'm walking out, and I was waiting for whatever. We hung out for a while at the Punchline, and I was featuring, and I forgot who the headliner was. It might have been Madrigal. It might have been Tom Rhodes. I don't remember. I think it was Tom Rhodes.
Yeah.
And it was. It was Tom. And the show's over, and we're just hanging out and stuff. And this is chronologically, I think, right around the time that Mikey passed away. And so the door guy, after we're hanging out, and she's like, hey, I'll take you back to the hotel. So he's driving me. And as he's driving me, this giant coyote just slowly walks in front of the truck. And the door guy was like, what the fuck? And the coyote just turned. I swear, dude, I'm not religious.
Yeah.
It was just probably the craziest coincidence. But the thing looked me dead in the eye, and it looked like it kind of nodded, and then just turned off and kept walking. And I was like, oh, shit. And I thought, you know what? I should call Mike. And the door guy was like, dude, I've lived in this neighborhood for 40 years. I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah.
Like, I've never seen a coyote, because he was losing his shit. And then so I I go home, you know, the hotel, and I'm packing, and I start thinking I should call Mike. And I thought, you know what? He's probably asleep. I had no idea. It was too late anyway. And I just started thinking of him. And I'm just laughing, packing, just laughing my ass off, thinking of stories of shit that Mike and I had done and stuff like that. It was just crazy. And then, you know, he was Buddhist, and that's what they want. They want you to not cry, but to laugh. It helps, apparently. They want happy thoughts because it helps ascend the soul to a higher place. So I'm hoping I did him a favor, you know, that night, and did him a solid, and gave, but it was rough, dude. It was an amazing, like, he was the funniest fucking dude. Like, just would say the funniest shit. Like, one time there's these two comics outside this club in New York, and they're both like kind of pretty boys, right? No, one of them's a comedian. He's like a pretty boy, and he was hooking up with a married girl. And her husband.
So it's Jeselnik and who?
Yeah, no, right. Yeah, no. This kid was like a door guy. He wasn't even, you know. And he was. Kidding. Yeah, it's funny though, right? And he was hooking up with this married chick, and her husband. Someone said, "Hey, you know, we see your husband coming down the street." And her husband was like an actor and like a pretty boy, you know. Yeah. And they were just two very dainty, you know, guys. And then the door guy goes, "Well, am I gonna have to kick his ass?" And Mike just goes, "That would be adorable." He goes, "If you two fought, that would be the most adorable fight I have ever seen." Like, just shit like that. He was great. Yeah. He was, that was rough, dude. That was a rough one.
He was a solid dude, man. He really was. And I, like I said, I only had a couple run-ins with him. But it was like, he was the kind of guy that you didn't need to know him at all.
Yeah.
And he would, and I knew of him. I'd seen him. I think we had met a couple times, but like, you didn't need to know him at all. And he already came up. The way he approached you was like, "Don't worry, I know everything about you. I know you know everything about me. Let's just start from here.
We're cool." Yeah, that's how he it was like.
I think he saw me and he was like, "Ah, the fucking party guy, huh?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he was like, "Ah, yeah, nice. I used to be like that." he was a very sweet guy.
It was like, the best is we would do ethnic shows in New York. And he would always do like Italian shows.
Yeah.
And he would make a mockery of the whole thing. Like, he would do, like, he would tell a punchline, and after every punchline, only on those shows, he would go, "Oh, I'm Italian over here." You know, just shit like that. Like, it was, oh man, it was, yeah, it was always fun. It was just always fun. He would call me. He hated that I left New York.
Yeah.
And he would call me when I was in Texas before I went to LA. Like, when I told him, that little time I saved up a little bit of bread again. And he would call me, go, "Hey, Jerry, I just want to let you know, I can't wait for you to move to LA and fail so you can come back to New York." You know, like, just shit like that. Like, he would always say that. Like, it was really funny. He was great, man. He was great.
That's the beautiful thing about our profession, is you run into those people that, like, like, I always say that, I said last night at dinner, we were talking about something, and I said, "I, you know, I don't know what, I'm sure I was drunk, but I said, you know, you got to realize, like, I don't know what this was in reference to, but it was something about funny or dot, dot, dot."
Right.
And I was like, "No, you don't understand. Like, I'm like in the top 500 funniest people in the world, probably."
Right.
And they were like, "That's not true." And I said, "No." And I was like, "No. I forget what we were talking about." And I think we're talking about Bill Burr. And I said, "You got to realize, he's like top 1% of the funniest people in the world. He's in the top 1% of that."
Yeah.
And I was like, "I know the funniest people in the world." I think we were talking about my podcast. We were talking about vlogs.
Yeah.
And we were talking about podcasts. And I was like, no. Trust me when I say, like, I watch a lot of vlogs. A lot of these people that people say are funny are not funny.
Yeah.
So when you tell them, "Oh, they should have a TV show, they should do stand-up." No, they shouldn't. No, they really shouldn't.
It would be bad.
They've gotten very successful with their vlog, and I'm not talking about anyone I've mentioned today.
I know what you mean. Yeah,
but
yeah,
like,
yeah.
But like, they've gotten very successful. They should just, you know, keep
stick to that.
Yeah. Like, there's this guy, Roman Atwood, very interesting vlog, very funny guy, but I wouldn't say he should tour as a headliner or write his own script.
Right.
I think what he's doing is really great, and he should stay doing that. It's entertaining. I enjoy it. But, like, and then I was saying, like, you understand, like, Bill Burr, when he does F is for Family, you got to check that out, because he is the – if I'm top 500, he's top 15.
It's crazy.
Like,
it's – yeah.
In the world.
It's like those guys who are like superstars among like it's like NBA. Like yeah. we're those guys who are like somehow superstars playing with guys who are better than anyone else.
Maybe
in
I'm
basketball.
Not top 500. Maybe I'm top 1,000 though.
But I don't know about that. You're top 500.
I don't know. I'm trying to now I'm trying to put it in perspective, and I'm like, I bet there's a lot of really funny writers that are like insanely hilarious.
I don't know. Pure stand up. I don't know, dude.
Pure stand up. I think you figure there's what is there like 100 clubs.
Yeah,
probably 200 headliners working at any given time.
Yeah, yeah, you're
I'm one of those guys.
You're definitely higher than that. Yeah, so yeah,
but,
I don't know.
But I was saying to someone like, and that's the beauty of this business is like you say something about Bobby Kelly and I go, oh, I got a million Bobby Kelly stories,
right?
And it's I got a million Patrice stories. I got a million Bill Burr stories. I got a million of just hangout funny like Greg Giraldo.
Oh
like,
God,
and it's like to Stefano, it's like he was just. He was one of those guys that was just funny because he was funny. It wasn't like he was a written funny.
Right. He just naturally, there was like, he would just, it was crazy. Like,
We were talking about, what we were talking about last night was Patton Oswalt. I did a podcast with him on Doug Loves Movies.
Oh, nice.
And he was making fun of me for like 30 minutes.
Right.
And they were like, and someone said, did your feelings get hurt? I said, not at all.
It's
you're
fine.
Talking about a fucking ninja in comedy deciding that I'm going to be his target.
I'm good.
I fucking laughed my dick off.
It was great.
I go, it was one of the funniest fucking things I've ever been blessed to be a part of. You got to understand, I believe that people make fun of people they like. They don't make fun of people they don't like.
You don't even talk to people. You don't even acknowledge people. You're like, fuck those guys.
I go, you're telling me fucking Ratatouille is destroying me?
Come on.
Like,
yeah.
Fuck yeah, yeah. Dude. Like, and it was so funny, and it was one of those things where you just go, like, yeah, I got like I'm lucky. We're really lucky to have those people in our lives, and we're really lucky to be those people.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing is like you're that guy for somebody else. You know, like that's what's great. You know, like that's an amazing thing to think about. Like you're that person for someone else. You know.
So where can everyone find your vlog?
It's just go to YouTube, just Jerry Rocha, R-O-C-H-A, you know,
and do, I'm telling you, do it.
Try to do it daily.
Make a statement that in February, and incorporate your fans, in February, I'm going to do a rant every day at whatever, whatever time you do yours.
Right.
Pick a time, and then so post it. So like.
Well, I usually film them the night before and then put them up, you know, have them up by the morning.
So do them the night before and post them first thing in the morning.
That's not a bad idea.
And have your fans give you ideas of what to rant about.
Right, right.
Like, and tell me, hey, Bert, I'm doing my February vlog.
All right.
And I'll tweet it out to my fans.
Well, thanks,
my
man.
Fans will give you ideas.
Man. Yeah.
And what will happen is at least it'll fucking, I do believe it draws traction.
You're right. No, you're right. I think that's a good point with the vlog. Since they're only like, 6 minutes tops.
Mine are like 8-9 minutes.
Yeah,
but
could do that every
filmed,
day.
Like I film them, like I go out and do shit.
Yeah,
and I walk around and I put, you know, so it's a little more time.
That's cool,
like, fucking a little exhausting.
That's
but
cool.
There's 6 minutes of you ranting. You can bang one of those out every single night. Your writing will step up. And I think it'll aggregate people to your
YouTube
channel.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, that's true.
I know I'll retweet it. Do a couple podcasts and tell people, hey, this is what I'm doing this week, this month. But do it every day in February and then take a look at your numbers and see if they grew. I looked at my vlog and I was like, I had 4,000 followers on my YouTube channel. And I was like, okay. This was 2 months ago.
Okay.
To maybe almost now 3 months. I was in Philly and I was looking at these guys' vlogs and I was like, I have 4,000 subscribers to my channel. And I was like, okay, if I go and start doing biweekly vlogs, then I wonder if I can increase my viewers to like, I was like, I wonder if I can get to like 8,000.
Yeah.
And then I very quickly, I got to like, I think I'm at like 15,000 right
now.
Nice. But it's just by putting out content and going, hey guys, just so you know, this is a place you can come check back and there'll be new stuff.
Right.
I think that's what you should do.
I might try sooner than February, dude. I'm inspired. I might try to bang them out soon.
Start it tonight.
Yeah.
Be inspired and just say like, that's the cool thing about inspiration. I always say it just shows up for me. It's the problem is that it just shows up for me. So I can't say it's going to be here every day, but like when you get inspired, just start fucking doing it.
That's true.
What are the rant subjects?
Oh, I just do video games, comic books, movies, music, anything.
You should fucking...
Anything that's nerdy shit that I love, I go off on it.
I love it, dude. I love it. Yeah. I think you should start sooner the better.
Yeah. All right. I'll do it.
I think this has been great, man. It's
great. Thanks for having me, dude. Yeah, it's been great. Man.
Well, you're like one of the few people that I see out
right
at the clubs, and I go, oh fuck,
shit,
like,
Bert.
Like,
yeah,
a fucking,
it's great, man.
It's like a beacon of hope.
Oh, thanks. Like, oh, ditto, man. Ditto.
I was still in it.
It was fun seeing you at Target. I was like, ah, shit, that guy is crazy.
You know what's even funnier than that is I said to my wife, goes, who is that? And I said, oh, he's a comedian.
Yeah.
She's like, how do you know him? I said, God, we worked on the road together at the Laugh Stop.
Yeah, that was our first time.
That was the one time you were like, I think you were supposed to get a ride home with the guy that was owning the club at the time.
Yeah.
And you're like, he is way fucked up. I am not getting a ride.
I remember
him.
That. Yeah.
I was like, that's my ride.
Yeah.
And I had got in the car with him and I was like, this is one of those. This is like, you know, there's like 95% of the time you drink and drive, you're probably fine. This is that 5% where you know you're going to get in an accident. And I just got in the car with him and I was like, oh, dear God,
here we
please
go.
Get me from point A to point B. I wonder what he's doing. I haven't talked to him
I haven't
forever.
Heard from Pete in a minute, man. I haven't heard from Pete in a long time. Yeah.
He's been...
He was always nice to comics, man. He was good to us.
I liked him.
Yeah.
I liked him a lot. I never had a problem with him. People hated him.
Some people... I guess we were the lucky people only saw his good side. You know,
he was always really good to me. Paid me $3,000 for my first headlining gig.
That's so
on
nice.
Thanksgiving, and he said, just so you know, this isn't for all the times, but you have a wife and you have a kid.
Oh, that's
so
great.
Come bring them down here. They pay your travel. They put me up a really nice hotel, and that first Thanksgiving I had with Georgia and Leanne,
we were
in a hotel room in Houston, and I made $3,000.
That's so badass, dude.
And he lost his ass that week.
Of course.
Because no one showed up to the fucking club. But man,
the guys who were willing to do that, oh, forget it. Tremendous, man.
Yeah, I like his ex-wife too.
I don't think I met her.
I hung out with her. I'm forgetting her name right now. But,
right.
She was really good. That Thanksgiving, she took Leanne. I mean, we had no money.
Yeah.
And she took Leanne and Georgia clothes shopping for Georgia.
Nice.
She bought Georgia like 3 outfits.
Damn.
And
that's
nice. And then when they split up, she called me and she said, hey, I just want to give you a heads up. Pete and I are getting a divorce. And I was like, okay. She was like, I want to take you to dinner to tell you that it's not him. It's not me. It's just. So I went to dinner with her that one night that I was in town. And we talked. And she was like, you know, she was really cool. She worked for like Pepsi. She fucking.
Damn.
Yeah, she had a fucking.
Damn.
Sweet ass job.
Oh, boy. I can
imagine.
He
worked for Enron. Did you know that?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I heard that.
Now we're just catching up. All right, we should end this podcast.
Thanks
Everyone's
for having
like,
me, Bert.
Who gives a fuck where Pete works?
Remember that car he had?
Yeah, that big fucking truck. What? Tell them where they can find everything that they need to find.
Just go to my website. Probably easy. It's just jerryrochacomedy.com. And then that has all my links and stuff.
YouTube, Twitter.
Has all my YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Homepage.
Perfect, man.
Cool.
Appreciate it.
Happy brother. No, definitely.
This episode was brought to you by The Machine.